Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Really, I'm now aiming precisely at your groin, and I love it how Bond still follows him even as he's going to fetch the blessed bullet.
Yeah,
it's like he's still focusing the rifle on him, but it's all he's sort of hurried and scared, isn't he? And it's just come in or something, and I love this scene, and we've discussed it.
The way he's kind of his trembling legs as he raises his crotch as he's about to pull the trigger.
Oh,
it's so funny,
yeah.
His whole demeanour has sort of changed because at the start of the scene he's sort of dismissing Bond's PPK and he's wagging his finger, you know, I leave that stuff to others, and then at the end he's sort of scurrying around doing whatever Bond wants him to. It's a nice change.
Yeah, great point.
Would Bond have killed him then, or was he deliberately missing based on the sight being off because he actually knew that? These are annoying things that if it was a Craig film, we know I'd probably have a go at. But
I don't think it's as severe as I didn't know there was a pool down. It's still a bit reckless.
Because of that lead that Lazar has given Bond, he tells him that he can't meet him. It isn't in person. He has to deliver the bullets to somebody in a casino. So with the next scene, I'd forgotten that he was actually in another scene. I just thought he was in his shop, and that was it. But he, of course, is taken to the casino. Yeah, this was actually filmed in Macau. The reason it was filmed in Macau as opposed to like Hong Kong was apparently at the time that's where all the casinos were. There weren't any pretty much casinos. I don't know whether that was the sign of the times in Hong Kong. Again, on location, as we've said, we see the basket being lowered, and it's all very authentic, I think, stuff like this. Yeah. Like, I've never seen anything like it before.
Yeah,
it's great spy work. And then we see Anders, who she's the contact, not Scaramanga. Again, it makes Scaramanga more mysterious. He's in another lovely, it's like a light grey suit with a navy tie, possibly his best outfit in the film.
There are a few.
It feels so long ago since I saw it now. Yeah. It's only a quick scene, but...
Yeah, and you're right about the mystery aspect of it. I mean, it's really building up here. This is classic Bond when he's following a lead and he's not knowing where it's going to go. This is what we want to see, and we're actually with him on that. I love all this. This is great.
Yeah, and the that you mentioned about the way the locations are shot, and this is where Bond is sometimes at his best, is showing that world, and it feels like... It feels exotic, it feels bustling, it feels like you can almost smell it. And I think you don't really get that as much nowadays. I think maybe because we are all sort of, it's so easy, well, not at the moment, to travel and go, you know, kind of go on these kind of, you know, this feels like, it was like a travel log, you know, kind of, you know, this is it, this is here, the, you know, here's the casino. And also there's that little bit, you know, with the hydrofoil, where you get the, where they talk about the liner that's
yeah.
sort of, crashed in the sorry.
No, you're right. You're the tourist effectively, aren't you? Your eyes being opened to it along with Bond. Yeah.
Local history.
It's like what we've said it before about how, you know, it was a chance for audiences to venture around the world and be educated in some way. And I obviously it's jumping right to the end credits, but did you notice the first thing the first message that comes up is like made by Aeon Productions on location in Hong Kong, Macau, Thailand, and Pinewood Studios. As in, that's the first thing that audiences wanted to see, and by the end go, wow, this is where we've been. It's like, it was a big deal, the locations. And like I say, educational. No, exactly. They were so proud that they'd been to these places and filmed and brought it home on cinema. You know, it is impressive for audiences to see these kind, just like you said, Tom, this authentic transaction in this setting is like really awesome for audiences to see.
And they were absolutely delighted to see Bond, weren't they? And made it a big thing about their own culture whenever there was something, like you said, James Bond Island in this film. It's a bygone age, unfortunately. That's not the new film's fault, but like you say, there's only so many places in the world. They're running out of place. I mean, been to Venice and Istanbul, goodness knows how many times now, haven't they? But there are still places left, Africa mainly.
I think sometimes what Bond does really well is it does take you to that location that is, you know, it's often the capital, but then you kind of end up going down like the side streets, or you see something that's not the sort of tourist trap kind of. You get a glimpse of that, don't you? But there's always like, oh, Bond always end up in some sort of like sub, you know, some little, like, yeah, just, you know, some dodgy little town or some camp or something outside that. And I think that's what they need to do with the new ones, I think, is, yes, you know, going to these places that the other side of the world doesn't have quite the shine that it used to. But show me something that the tourists wouldn't see, you know. Bond in somewhere where, when you go on a package holiday, you're not kind of shown around these sort of places.
We get Bond on the hydrofoil, whatever it is, going to Hong Kong, which of course at the time was still, well, it was owned by Great Britain, wasn't it? It was still British territory then. Is that when we get the voiceover, which is a bit of a plant, isn't it, for the, what we don't know then is going to be the MI6, well, not headquarters, but the locale, Station H, I don't know. but it's so Bond. And I think it was Cubby Broccoli who, when they were shooting or location scouting, he saw this and thought, amazing, that is in between Chinese and British waters. No one can sort of access it. Yeah, I think it had only recently sunk and capsized. And it was like, oh, what an amazing thing. What a good idea that... I wonder what's going on in there. It'd be a perfect place to listen in on the two sides. I think that was fair play to Cubby for that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And what a brilliant set.
The internal, yeah.
My
the set. So clever.
Yeah,
interior. It isn't Ken Adam. I'm not, you know, the other set designers on the films have been brilliant, I think. We go right up to Peter Lamont, don't we? But who was only, well, this year died, another sad loss. When they're going through, so they... obviously, Anders is following on the hydrofoil. We then get, again, it's so many authentic location shots. You've got buses, taxis, the noise of everything. Just the bustling Hong Kong city. Eventually, Bond manages to get into a taxi. Follow that rolls. And then we get the introduction of Goodnight, who, of course, deliberately blocks him off in her car.
Yeah, probably.
No, I think she's... I don't think she does. I think she's well. She's just she's.
I think she thinks she's doing something good. I think
She's an airhead. She's just
right.
She's just parked the car there, and then, you know, not realizing she's blocking in the road. You know, the other taxi. I think this is, and that's why you obviously get the what do you call it? An inverted bedpan.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think she is. She's just like this blonde in a. You know, in a convertible, pulls up outside and he's just dumps a car, and then he has to get out and like.
I'm not qualified in this at all, but I mean, is almost the phrase "dumb blonde"? Does it come from people like Goodnight in culture? I don't know. I don't know whether that's true, but I don't even know whether I agree that she is a dumb blonde. But yeah,
it is. But she's also like Rosie Carver 2.0, isn't she?
Oh, and John does not like her.
Yeah,
we know that already.
No, I'm not keen either.
Yeah, you didn't invite her at Christmas, did you?
I didn't. No, she didn't make it. Yeah.
She was whining then, wasn't she?
I mean, good night, what should we say? This film could have been over 45 minutes earlier if it wasn't for Goodnight and Lieutenant Hill. I mean, basically, Roger wins this mission in spite of those two idiots. That's the only word I can define. I mean, they are... I mean, I don't have a problem with either actor. I actually quite like them as characters. If that is the best that MI6 can come up with, then the Russian Secret Service has nothing to worry about. That's all I'll say. Because it's... wow.
I was
sorry
to say about HIP. I learned what I think is an interesting fact about HIP. You guys might know this. I was astounded when I first learned it, because I've seen The Man with the Golden Gun a lot and I've never noticed it. Did you know he's got two different voices in the film?
Oh, right.
Yeah. I knew he was partly dubbed, but I couldn't tell when.
When? Well, yeah, when?
What they said was that it's his voice when he's inside and it's the dubbing when he's outside, but that's not strictly true, because after finding it out, I went back and watched all his scenes. And see, once you notice it, you cannot unnotice it. It's really, the most obvious bit is when he picks Bond up to take him to High Fats to drop him off, and he's got the nieces in the back.
Drop the kids.
So there's a really clear bit there when he says something, and then Moore gets out the car and he says something again. It's completely different. They're not even. I mean, so if you think about the.
Oh no. Is that why the Wizard of Ice was grumbling?
Think about the scene where M's asking them about the Solex, and he says, he showed it to me in the bar, and then it wasn't there. So think about that.
Oh, yeah.
And contrast that with the scene when they're having the fight outside High Fats Farm. It's their father.
Yeah,
so different.
True.
Their father.
Which one's real?
and with Britt Eklund as well, is she dubbed or in part or
only
half and half?
I think the odd line. The odd line. I mean,
so is the fact that they're part dubbed linked to how much they struggle with the mission, do you think? Or
well, I don't know. Goldfinger seems to be an iconic character without being able to speak a word of English, doesn't he? I was going to say, I'll bring Chris in here, because obviously Chris, I know, is a big horror fan. This film pairs Christopher Lee and Britt Eklund, of course, from The Wicker Man. She dubbed a totally different voice in that, wasn't she? So this is more of her real voice.
Yeah, I think she's... It's one of those things you take... When you watch Bond films, you just take it, particularly from, Connery and Moore, you take it for granted that most of the supporting cast is dubbed by someone else anyway, particularly if it's a woman.
Same person,
It seems like such a strange thing. But yeah, it's great to see... I guess she's fairly iconic. You know, she's in... The Wicker Man, which is a fantastic film, probably the best British folk horror film. Obviously with Christopher Lee in as well. I think I think she's actually pretty good, given what she has to work with, which is that she's characterised as like saying that they're kind of the dumb ditzy blonde. She's just like, oh, come on. Every time she's on screen, you're rolling your eyes. It's like, oh, come on. Like, oh, now her bum has pressed the button. And it's like, kind of 70s sex kind of comedy thing romp. It's really silly, and she does. But she has charisma. She has you watch it. She actually has some sort of presence. Given what she has to work with, this seems quite an achievement.
You see what I have to work with here? Again, that's Batman.
Yeah, you've done it again.
I've done it again.
You've said it again.
Just quickly, Chris, what does Jess think of Goodnight?
Well, not a fan, obviously. But it's difficult because you can't... It's when it comes to it's the period, it's the and she's a character who's written just for the plot, just for things to happen. She's not a fully formed character who we're investing in. She's just there to say a line so Bond can say something. She's just there for her to be to do something so then someone else can do it. She's not really a great kind of character. Yeah, she's not a poster child for feminism, should we say.
So her intro here, we learn that she has a pre-existing relationship with James Bond, which
after 2 years
only happens a couple of times.
So real character development then, compared to most Bond girls.
Well, it's pretty babyish that, you know, she's just pined for him all this time. And now, and later on, you know, it's a bit like, oh yeah, she does actually resist him a little bit.
She was right to be like that. We're meant to be rooting with Bond's character then, that she's a bit of a waste of time, are we?
But this is all in contradiction to the book, isn't it? And in the book, she's the total opposite, I believe, and full of agency, very very capable. And so I've not read this book. And is this one of the short stories, Man of the Golden?
No, it's just one of the last ones. It was the one that was written after he died.
Yeah, of course, that's right. I believe that they've made a conscious effort to write her very differently for the film.
I'm not sure my problem with her is her performance. I mean, she has a couple of duff notes, like, aren't the fried mushrooms terribly interesting? You know, it's... like, Scaramanga's going to know you're being false there. But no, I think her performance is okay. It's more the way she's written. Yeah. She's supposed to be an intelligence officer. She's too clumsy and too useless too often. I think you could get away with a couple of stupid moments, but she just gets too many. And I've often wondered, would this be a better film if Maude Adams was the Bond girl and got all the screen time? And I'm sure it would, but then I think, then she wouldn't have come back for Octopussy and we wouldn't have got the Octopussy we got, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Maude. How do you like it?
I think you might have...
So dated this humour, sorry. Carry on.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Stephen, in terms of... I don't think there's a bad performance by an actor in this film. I think the issue is actually how a lot of them have been written. I think I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head there.
Apparently he wasn't happy with the script either, Mank. I believe from...
Did Maybaum do the last draft?
It sounds like there was a lot of back and forth, and then apparently Cubby and Harry were fighting at this time, and there's a, I forget his name, but there's an E.ON executive who said that in meetings, Harry and Cubby were fighting to see who could sit closest to the executive. Saltzman apparently was acting very childish, and then if Cubby brought up an idea, then Saltzman would veto it, and back and forth. And it does sound like the making of it was very messy, and the production date was possibly too rushed. And when you stop and analyse it in great detail, like we are, a lot of these niggles become apparent, and you think, right, okay, maybe this film would have benefited. I'm sure it would have, with, you know, another half a year of production time, a more polished script. But we've got what we've got, and it seems like most of us still like it a fair bit.
It's like during this review, your sort of loving of the film is under threat. You know, Harry barely hanging on, perhaps, at the moment. I'm really worried.
Don't you worry.
Might lose more people by the end of the...
No, because, this is the interesting... I think I said it, you know, when I sort of introduced my feelings on the film when we began recording. Perhaps at the time it was, but certainly now, I'm very aware of the faults and flaws whilst I'm watching it. But that doesn't mean that I don't enjoy watching it more than some of the others, and it doesn't mean that it doesn't work in a lot of ways. And I also admire the bravery and boldness in a lot of the writing and the creative decisions. So even though there are flaws that are seemingly quite obvious and there is something boiling over behind the scenes, there's plenty to love about this film.
Just going on to Britt Eklund, the actress, because you always just like to touch a bit about the actors playing the parts. She was married to Peter Sellers at the time. And can anyone link Casino him Royale. With James Bond?
Casino Royale.
Yeah, a bit easy that one, wasn't it? It's one of those, you know, maybe in 100 years of this podcast we might touch upon it, but I know License to Queer has been bigging it up, so... Perhaps it might need to be revisited a bit earlier. But
I have.
Have you seen it, Stephen?
I'm busy that night.
Yeah. We'll just have an empty desk, I think, for that
Self-serve.
One. Let's say, yeah. We'll just talk about Moonraker.
The score is quite fun, actually. The score is quite fun in a kind of jaunty, dated way. I mean, I've only seen it once. I can't say I'll go back to revisit it. Sorry, License to Queer. Not for
Well, that's Oh dear. There's too much going on. One day we might get around to it anyway. Got to do the redo. Yeah. Different adaptations, different to a redo, as Matthew will tell me. Anyway, yes, back to Britt Ekland. Of course, both lead women were Swedish in this. She also went out with Rod Stewart for a while, a few years. And she was in his Tonight's the Night video. Again, dated. But good music.
She's been in a few marriages, hasn't she? I think. To quite.
Yeah. Like Roger Moore.
She was in. Was she not in Get Carter? Was she in Get Carter?
Yes, that was the only sort of big film she's been in.
Get Carter.
Get Carter. Yeah. And The Wicker Man, obviously. Yeah, the only bit of trivia I had on her was, is she the only Bond alumni to have appeared in I'm a Celebrity?
There was Jenny Bond, wasn't there? But that's different.
Yeah. There you go. I don't know whether anyone watches it, but I don't. But
I remember Michael Madsen being in Big Brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Incredible, yeah.
Absolutely bizarre, he's
some
that.
Kind of a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. David Arnold.
Growling his way.
Dear me, I don't know what... Don't know what's lower, being in Big Brother or being Dine of the Day. No, I don't believe. I don't. Both absolutely valid. Valid, Michael.
You can't take your eyes off either.
Yeah. Could do one of those. One's a cold house with loads of people acting up to the camera. Yeah. The other one's the Ice Palace. You know, I don't know, something like that. I'm thinking on my feet. I'm thinking of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Mary Goodnight. Mary, incredible. Didn't really seem like a Mary. Did I?
No.
Yeah. So we go. So this is like one of those famous scenes where, you know, the Bond fans particularly will single out as he's pretty rude, isn't he? He's not particularly nice to her at all. He's a green Rolls Royce and all this. There can't be that many in Hong Kong. But it's Bond who's wrong. She's the one who knows that.
Yeah.
No, it's... Shut up, mate. It's the... You know.
She laughs at him.
Yeah.
She needs more scenes really like this, where she knows what she's talking about. She's been in Hong Kong for a couple of years. You've just got here, Bond. Yeah. Shut up. I know the lay of the land. This is the hotel. This is there. She needed more of that, I think, to be more believable.
Yeah.
Or just put her in a wardrobe.
Yeah. Well, again, I was reading about Guy Hamilton, and if you think... About his three films, we've got Rosie Carter,
Woman in a
Bikini
Wardrobe
most of the time.
Oh, yeah,
sorry. We've got Good Night in a Bikini for a heck of a long time, and then we've had, you know, Jill St. John in a bikini for the entire bit at the end, haven't we? So I think that was a Guy Hamilton, a favourite of his.
Well, yeah, I was going to mention that the end of Diamonds Are Forever, the Bond girl is like being held captive by the villain and being forced to wear a bikini.
Yeah.
And then two films later, it's the same. It's the same.
Yes, my love me.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's why Tom Mankiewicz actually quit. He said that after writing The Man with the Golden Gun, he said, I felt like I was writing the same scenes over and over and over, so I didn't want to come back for another one.
Interesting, that.
And then they had Anya in a bikini by Stromberg in The Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just say, we're talking about Bond being a bit of a twat towards Goodnight in this film, and he is repeatedly, but I would argue, okay, that there's nothing in this film he does, well, the mod scene's different, we'll come at the mod scene, there's nothing he does in this film in Goodnight that is as bad as what he does to Triple X when they have that great scene in The Spy Who Loved Me when he says that I've killed your husband, and they both have the realisation that, you know, we're going to have to work together, I've killed your partner, but we're going to get by it. Then it cuts to them hanging together on a cable, and Moore has this look on his face as if, haha, you're stuck with me. I killed your partner, but I'm going to get you anyway.
Yeah, it's awful, isn't it?
For me, that's the low point. Dude, for Moore's Bond. Yeah. It's so smug. It's I think, and it's played for laughs as well.
Yeah, because that's the scene that I really like, the scene before, because it's Roger Moore being serious.
Yeah.
Yeah, example, yeah.
Yeah, like in our line of work, people get killed, and you know, when someone's trying to shoot you at 40 miles an hour.
So good, isn't he? He's so good
at
those
things. Yeah. And then,
it's like he's talking to Craig in Skyfall.
I've thought that then that look he gives is not on.
But previously he'd had the outrageous flirting with Naomi in front of Anya. Yeah. Not that he owes anything to Anya, you could say, but still.
He's a man.
Again, Jess wasn't a fan of that, famously, so. Good night, sir. Where are we up to now? We sort of get the impression that this is one of the first Bond girls who's been doing the chasing. Actually, no. All I can think of is a character named Eunice Gayson there. Can't think of the... So it's Sylvia Trench, yeah. She does a bit of chasing, doesn't she? But it's quite rare in a Bond film that there's this... Sorry, have I said something funny?
You said a word wrong.
Yeah. Like, my tongue went.
Game
so right. Crisp, like impressional or something. It's very...
Yeah.
It's lovely, lovely word.
Sorry.
Slide fluff there. Yes. Yeah, anyway, so then we mentioned the previous relationship, hinted at, we've already said that. And then, good night, but I do that to you after 2 years.
Yeah.
Yes, you bloody well would. Is that dubbed? I don't know.
Well, that sounded Indian, Tom, so maybe that was...
You can't say that, John, anymore, I'm sorry.
But it shows that Skyfall wasn't the first film to be really potty mouthed. This film is...
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Yeah,
It gets a lot of stick. This film gets stick for M being grumpy and hating Bond in every scene. But, I mean, come on. Moore's constantly shagging in front of him. Of course he's going to be a bit grumpy with him.
At the end of every film,
flashing a cheek at M and saying, oh, what are you going to do?
Yeah. 007. Yeah.
If you're enjoying Really 007, why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram? Look us up at Really 007 Pod.
We get into the hotel, the Peninsula Hotel, famously. I assume it's the Peninsula Hotel, because they follow the roles, don't they?
Yeah.
And lovely little cameo. This guy could be on one of those.
Yes.
Hilarious short appearances. The bellboy, as it were. Yes. Yeah. I hope that wasn't dubbed. I'm really paranoid now. But all these parts.
Was any of it real?
Yeah, you were real. That's true joke. He goes into the room. Probably another gorgeous set, I assume, at Pinewood. But twin room, I noticed, not a double bed, because obviously it's just for her. Then I assume, isn't it? It's just her staying there. Although when you see later, you see. Stroking the golden gun. I always think that's on the yacht. Yeah. The junk. Anyway, this is really minute, it's a twin room or not. Anyway.
In-depth review.
The score is stunning here. Lovely, soft version of the theme tune. The Man with the Golden Gun tune. And then we get, Bond perving on her in the shower, basically.
Kent's
a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. He puts his gun away, doesn't he? He's going around with a lovely. He's going away with that a lovely gun. Walter. I do think, there's nothing better than Roger Moore with the Walter. It's almost like it's an extension of his anatomy, isn't it? The Walter, it fits his body so well. But when he sees her in the shower, with a little grin, pops his gun back in his pocket.
Right, lads.
Won't be needing this. Yeah.
I think it's a reason why, to me, he comes across a bit more dislikable in this film, because the only time he's smiling is when he's pervy. And that's a real issue to me.
I approve.
What I will say is the amount of times I have quoted audible stuff. I mean, that is just...
Yeah.
What a line that is.
It is. It's so funny.
It's brilliant.
Is he just taking the mick out of... Oh, you're never going to use it. Or just the fact that
she's in the shower. She's in the shower with it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look
particularly a water pistol.
It might be a
water pistol.
It is a great line, you're right. It's a really good line.
It's the best line of the film for me, that. I love it.
Yeah. But, the way, obviously when she, passed me that robe, and then he walks over to her slowly and then, looks her up and down. He gives her the robe. And then, and then he's watching her in the mirror. It's not great behaviour, to be honest with you.
No. It's a bit like the, a bit of a ever so slight flash of the nipple, a bit like Living Daylights, Pushkin's wife.
Yeah.
Come on, lads, let's be honest.
Yeah, well, in this film, there's a lot, isn't there? There's,
Chew me.
Heck, yeah.
Bottoms up.
So, the only scene there isn't nudity in the strip club, that's lap dance.
Yeah. They run it pretty close, though.
So anyway, they get out of the bathroom. They're now, this is another awkward scene to talk about, but we're going to have to do it. But the plot does tie in with the plot, because Bond obviously finds the cigarettes that she's taken. That's why he's there. And he finds out that they're actually bullets. And that, well, we knew that anyway. You know, Math, we've done so many impressions of this growing up. Like, yeah. Give me that. Give me that. Such a lovely voice. Yeah,
she's really good in this scene.
And I'll break it unless you tell me where those bullets go. So we get a bit... Yeah, she is.
She's genuinely
great.
Scared,
she's
really and good. She sells the pain. So when he's bending her arm, I think what makes the scene more uncomfortable than it might be is the fact that she is really convincing as a woman who's getting her arm twisted back. This must be the most controversial scene in Moore's era, and it's obvious to see why. Before doing this podcast, I thought a lot about it, and I've been trying to justify it. And I think on the sort of justified side, it does make sense from a storytelling point of view, because he thinks an assassin's trying to kill him. He thinks that she's involved. Well, he knows she's involved. And at the end of the day, you tend to forget, because Roger's so likable and such a lovely guy in all his films, you tend to forget that Bond is a ruthless, cold-blooded killer. He's not Clark Kent or Captain America. You know, if Clark Kent slapped a woman, or if Steve Rogers slapped a woman, it would be completely different. But Bond is, if you read the novels, Bond's a bastard. He's a cold-blooded snob, really. And when you watch Roger's films, you tend to think of him as this jolly, cuddly, warm guy. So maybe that's part of it.
So yes, Stephen, in some ways you can justify it in terms of the story, but something I wanted to check or perhaps query is, why doesn't she say that she was the one who sent the bullets at this point? Is there a reason, or is it just a...
I have a working theory. I'm definitely not saying this is correct. It's just, I've thought about this a lot. You guys can tell me if I'm right or wrong here. So I've rewatched it twice recently. The first time I watched it, I was thinking what I assume you're thinking, Matt, as in, why didn't she say at the hotel, I'm the one who sent the bullet? Why did she not just say then and there? So what I'm thinking or theorising is that she wanted him to kill Scaramanga. Mm. If she told him at the hotel, Scaramanga's not after you, Bond might just give up at that point and say, okay, he's not trying to kill me. Why am I going to kill him then? So she was still in the hotel keeping up the ruse, possibly.
Yeah. Does she definitely know, A, that he's Bond, who's in her hotel, and B, and I know he's got a full-size mannequin, you know, with a gun pointing, but she may never have been back.
No, she might not have been down there in his dungeon.
So possibly that, I don't know.
It's a messy film. The screenplay is, and the story is messy. It's a good point, though, Matt. There's a lot of people that bring that up and say that, you know, why doesn't she tell him? So it might be an error. It might be. What do you guys think, Chris, Harry, John?
I think, like you say, I also wonder. She's not, how much confidence has she got in Bond at this moment in time to reveal that she, you know, if she does know it's Bond, then she's probably should rather not tell him straight away.
But she's willing to have her arm broken. Well,
no, she's not.
Sorry, but I mean, she's willing to go through a bit of pain. Yeah, initially, she's like,
unless it's the fear of Scaramanga as well, whether she's always feels like she's got him breathing down her neck. Only maybe later does she feel like she's got Bond in a safe place. Yeah, but it's a difficult one to try and excuse.
So I wonder then why she changes her mind, because when she comes into the room when Goodnight's there and Goodnight gets stuffed in the closet, that's when she reveals that she sent the bullet. So what is it that's happened then to change her mind, I wonder?
What's happened in between?
Quite a lot.
Yeah, I think we'd really have to dig deep. And
I mean,
I think it'd end up being a conspiracy theory if we could.
I have a complete theory about this film, that it was written and just made up as it went along. I'm not even joking about that. I reckon it was like really like pieced together Suicide Squad in kind of thing in terms of that it doesn't make any cohesive sense. And I think that the whole film has this lovely mystery thing going on about Bond doing some investigative work. And then all of a sudden, this Solex agitator comes out of nowhere. And for me, the film just falls flat then, and the story just goes out of the window. And it's like Miss Anders plays two different characters for me in this moment, is that one minute you've got this hard-edged woman and next minute you've got someone who's desperate to give away. I just think, again, it's poor writing that they've not actually thought through how to do it.
I think you get this a lot in the Bond films. They give you a moment that's meant to be, say, exciting or shocking or dramatic, and then when you stop and examine it in the cold light of day, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I think the king of these, maybe not the king, but one of the worst is in The Living Daylights, when the two girls come and pick up Bond, yeah. And they bring him to Felix, and they've got him at gunpoint, and then they bring him to Bond's best friend, and you know, he's his best man in the next the next film. Just thinking, Felix, why didn't you just tell them that I was, you know, they were working with you? And in The Man with the Golden Gun...
Hip's a bit serious. It's similar, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. The bit when Hip picks him up and takes him to the boat. That scene makes no sense because they try and justify it, I think, when they go into the slanty office and Hip says, I wanted to get you away because I didn't know how much you knew. Well, you could have just done that, you know, 5 minutes later or in the boat.
I think it's whilst the police are there, whilst he's amongst the police on that boat.
Yeah, but... Bond's a secret agent. He's fairly quick on the uptake.
Secret agent?
He's back.
The more you sort of pull it apart, these things don't stand up, do they? Within isolation, if you took out the sort of the violence and the threat, he is doing his job. He's trying to get the information, isn't he? That's all you could say about this, that it's necessary, but obviously the violence is the unnecessary...
There is
coercion, isn't it?
There is light relief. Sorry.
Yeah. The joke about what is it? He's tall, slim, and dark.
Yeah, so's Matt. Yeah. And then you know, like, does he have any defining feet? How will it look like? He has a third nipple. Like, that's you know, that's hardly likely to help me unless Bottoms Up is a strip club and Scaramanga is performing.
Yeah.
I literally laughed out loud at that.
Sarky, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an incredible line.
So he's a lover too.
Yeah.
I really like him when
unless
they're talking
Scaramanga
about...
is performing there.
Yeah, exactly. So funny.
Sick image.
Yeah.
A few people have described Bond over the years as an apex predator, as in he's the main threat in any film. And I really like the line when he says they're talking about whether she gives the bullets to Scaramanga or whatever, and Bond says he wants her to give the bullets because something like, I want him at the casino and I want him there. I love that line.
Yeah, that's good.
He's in control. He's going to take control of the situation. He's not afraid. Is Scaramanga's the one of the world's most dangerous hitmen and he's after me? No, I want him there. I really like that.
She basically blackmails her, doesn't he? To make sure that, well, effectively the killer, unless she leads him to Scaramanga, which completely goes against what you said. Well, she's the one who brought him here, so it's what she wants, isn't it? Enough to risk your life for it.
She's a tragic character, isn't she? She's a really tragic character that just gets sold a really poor hand in this film. And she's the best written character of the thing for me, definitely. I think I said it in the group that I think Maud Adams is an incredibly underrated actress. To me, her and Christopher Lee are the absolute standouts of this film. And I just think she just gets treated so badly by men in general in this film. And it's really sad. It's really sad. It's not... She, for someone who wants Bond to be her white knight and actually save her, Bond treats her appallingly. The last time we see them is the old three pillow trick with Goodnight in the cupboard. And next minute she's dead. And she's willing to prostitute herself to be saved, and she doesn't get saved. It's a very tragic character. It really is.
And it would later be repeated in Casino Royale with Solange. So
she's there's less investment.
Yeah, Yeah, but she knows what she's doing. I know.
But she, yeah, but
yeah. I'm sure she's not having a great time.
No, but they're
yeah.
But...
yeah, true.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
I'm not. No, well, that's not a criticism. That's the situation she's in. But Bond doesn't slap her about in that one, so you know. Yeah, and then he does a joke, doesn't he, at the end? You know, about the when he's pouring the champagne and that. That would be a pity. Because they're very expensive. I can't remember what it's different. But it's just, again, oh, get lost, mate. I love you because you're Roger, but nothing else.
She's incredibly, incredibly beautiful, Maude Adams. I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
When, Dad's favourite. Britt Eklund, imagine you're Britt Eklund, so you're already an extremely attractive woman, and you think, yeah, I'm going to be the new Bond girl, and then you get on set and see Maude Adams. You must have been like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Well, I said
there's
she
something,
was,
though. I'm trying to...
Britt Eklund... Yeah, Britt Eklund thought that she'd been given the part, and then when she saw that Maude Adams had been given it, she was absolutely distraught. But then it was like, no, you're going to play a different character, I think. So there was a bit of rivalry between them to start with, I think, even though they were both Swedish.
You can see why they brought her back for Octopussy, even though...
Yeah.
I mean, if they did that nowadays, just say if Eva Green was playing a different character and three films
after. So weird.
When you stop and think about it that way, I mean, we all watched these films as kids. So it wasn't a big deal to us. You know, Maude Adams is the one film she's in. Is it two films later, three films later?
Mark Lawrence.
Joe Don Baker.
These things happen. But now it would be so weird. Think about it. Vesperland, Eva Green in Skyfall, or Eva Green just playing a different character, Inspector. You'd be, what? What's going on here?
There weren't as many actors and people wanting to be famous then, I don't think. I think it genuinely is a lot of that. They're like, get your mates around as well.
She was good. I think this is a really good part, Octopussy. We know she can do it. You know,
I don't think we did know.
That's a testament to her.
That's why she's underrated actress, because in one film she's playing a kept woman and a tragic character, and in the other film she is a very strong female character. That's phenomenal acting.
We did go into it that she was essentially screen testing James Bond for Octopussy, and that's how she got the part. She wasn't even considering herself for it. But then when they saw how well she did in those scenes, they were like, hang on, just get her. It's a bit babyish, but it wouldn't happen now, of course not. Yeah, I think we'd all agree that she was the right part for Octopussy, so. And the right part for Anders.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Can someone remind me what the next shot, the first shot of the next scene is?
I won't show you, I'll just do the sound effect. Yes, I will show my bottom.
Yeah, it isn't the shot of the logo bottoms up there. That's when they go outside, is it?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, it's the
real bottom.
And the hair covering all the right places.
Yeah. It's crisp.
Sorry, I might have been wrong. I think this might be the woman who's in the title sequence, not Chumi.
Oh, right. Yeah. No? Well, okay, she's
I think
both seem pretty willing to. I think both would have been willing to appear in the title sequence.
You mean this one?
Yeah, in the very first shot. Right. Which I think Harry said was quite iconic. So.
Math went for it on that.
Yeah, so can you remember what Gibson orders in this scene?
It's ginger ale.
Good. A.
Yeah, that's the real quiz,
yeah. Gibson. Yeah, he's just a normal guy, and he's just...
Yeah, in the East, just having a bit of time away.
Yeah,
someone like him, that actor, you know, I can't believe him growing up, like, oh, I just always want to be an actor and a dream. Shakespeare plays and everything, and then he's, you know, hardly in it, and then... the way he's rolled back. Anyway, sorry, I'm jumping the gun with it.
Hip's next to him. Is this the first time we see Hip?
Really interesting, yeah, I think.
He is, yeah. It's an odd scene, just a very quick scene without Bond in, and they're sort of waiting. And Bond, of course, is in the alley.
Smoking a cigar.
Well, it's Roger Moore, isn't it? It's nothing to do with James Bond, I think.
I'm sure that cigar's almost...
fancied his cigarette.
Yeah, that cigar is almost on the other... the pavement on the other side of the road. It's one of the longest cigars. Massive giveaway. If Scaramanga was up in that scaffolding looking down, he might not be able to see Bond, but he might just see this cigar poking out from under a roof.
Bigger than Nick Nack, isn't it? Yeah. Can't say that. He's in a lovely darker brown suit now. Of course, bit of product placement with the Rolex just to check the time, which is quite crisp. And then I think we see the logo bottoms up. And there's like it's cut at the moment with Scaramanga in with Anders. Is that back on the junk? I know I'm obsessed with this.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, because that's the bed at the end, isn't it? Goodnight and Bundering.
Yeah, the music is quite unusual. I don't think it's on the soundtrack because it's sort of
what the one that builds to the shot. Oh, right.
It goes like proper electric guitar, funk, jazz, sort of very crisp. And then he sees Knickknack, of course, in the alley. Rob Parker's favourite piece of music that John Barry's ever written. We finally hear.
Yeah.
Why is he wearing a bowler hat? Don't know. It looks quite good, doesn't it?
Yeah. It looks quite good.
John?
Yeah. John, I love the little cheesy grin he gives when he looks at him in the mirror.
Yeah. It's almost childlike, isn't it? It's playing up to this idea of being childlike almost.
Yeah. What a character.
Yeah.
Wouldn't get it. People.
No, you wouldn't. Just again, it is like the balls of the movie.
No.
Like the reason. There's not they're not a f- just they weren't I'm not talking about sort of being sensitive or anything like that. They were, back then they weren't afraid of having characters like this, sort of intriguing characters that do you know what I mean though? It's it's a bold step and, again, something completely new.
Yeah, I totally agree. You can't have every henchman being a massive, muscular, blonde-haired
guy who doesn't
say much. And Knickknack is very different as a henchman. I'm not just talking about his size because he's not really a tough guy. He's not presented as a physical threat to Bond, even though he throws a lot of bottles at him at the end. He's a little chap who wears a bowler hat and he walks about and, you know, sometimes he's got a... You know, he's making food for Scaramanga most of the time. He cooks dinner at the end.
Yeah.
Chef, interior designer.
Yeah.
Polishes
the silverware.
I love the look on his face when Hip sort of tells him to get away from the body. The little look on his face as if to say.
Oh, yeah. Such brilliant scene.
It is.
I really like the scene. Sorry.
Yeah, so do I.
It's really effective, isn't it?
Yeah, when it builds up to the assassination, world class. But before then, there's no music and there's just the sound of footsteps on the road, which is so effective. Like so it's building to something, and you've got those lovely heels clobbering along the road. And then, when the music kicks in, goodness me, sensational cinema.
Lovely shot of Scaramanga, his eye.
Is it quite funny that an assassin uses a handgun from that distance? Is that quite?
Yeah.
I don't really know how handguns work, but it seems quite far for a handgun to shoot.
Like for this, he didn't need the golden gun for this, does he? Really? maybe when he's with high fat because it's a disguised gun, isn't it?
But it's one shot, one kill, isn't it? So.
That's Golden Eye, it's to let your employer know.
Cinematic. It is. And he's got a real pride and sort of arrogance about his work that he wants it to be recognised that it's him with his golden bullets.
And it's a lovely double bluff. When Bond and the other character drop.
Yeah.
It's like, did he actually shoot him?
Yeah, the way Bond goes down is brilliant. And yeah.
Do we know that's Gibson then when we first see him in the
I don't think we know until
M says. Yeah. I bet you did.
I should think you did, yeah.
Yeah. So good. it's absolutely brilliant this. And like you said, I mean it's pretty graphic again, a gunshot in the head for a PG in the 70s. Fairly, Roger Moore wouldn't be like that when he at least he wouldn't. Yeah, and then, like you say, Stephen, the sort of... Knick-knack, just checking the body. I don't know why Hip... Does Hip sort of say, what on earth are you doing?
What was he doing?
Does he take a
sword?
Yeah.
You don't see
it. It all makes sense.
You just see him tampering.
No, you don't. No, but that's good.
Yeah.
That's good writing, because you don't...
Yes.
Like you don't see again Casino Royale. You don't see Bond.
Put it on the belt.
Take the thing and put it on the belt. Yeah, good.
Yeah.
It's quite a conspicuous character, isn't he? You know, if you have a crime scene, all these people keep murdering them. This small man with a top hat keeps walking past.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it might be the same assassin.
It can't be him. They're just, you know, it's not him. Yeah. He's wearing a bowler hat.
Can you imagine that?
It's not that singer.
Can you imagine the description on the news? We are looking for a little man with a bowler hat.
Well, don't look now. Yeah.
Yeah. A midget in a gun and a bag of peanuts. Yeah,
that wasn't on the version I watched either, Tom.
No, but again, it might be the Dolly's braces. The the mind believes what it thinks. So then we get Hip's Trip, and we know that famously from the soundtrack. I hope we all do. Very John Barry, quite sinister. Apparently, I don't know whether anyone knows this, this was sampled on a Prodigy track.
Nice.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So there you go. So, yeah. You'll probably be hearing that in the background now when I edit it.
I'm going to show a cutaway of that now.
We'll stick with the original picture. Yeah, so he's being deliberately evasive. Like we said, we're not sure whether he needs to be and all that, but he also works with MI6. The guy who plays him, Soon Tech O, Korean-American guy, like we said, Stevens revealed the dubbing. I've got two other roles I could barely find that he's been in, and they were more recent. he was a voice in Mulan and the sequels. I don't know how big the role was, but... And this is a film we absolutely
two voices are. Did he provide two?
The same, no, same character, same character. Not because you don't do that anymore, Harry. You don't have a different part within the same franchise anymore. Yeah, he played a sensei in, like I said, a film we maybe watched once or twice and loved it when we were kids. It's never been seen since. Beverly Hills Ninja.
Oh.
With Chris Farley.
Yeah,
I thought it was class, but again, not. Sorry, it's children, so no.
You can't get that. You can't get it.
No, no, no. Anyway, that's all I know about this guy. So he's on this gorgeous old boat. The first time I think we see an exterior of the junk, and Anders is waiting in the bed. First time we see the golden glove.
Golden glove.
Oh dear, Tom. Go to sleep. Yeah, we see the golden gun in all its glory. That's what she said. Absolutely gorgeous music. No dialogue. Yeah. You know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah.
I think it's a really... Like John said in terms of Anders sort of prostituting herself, it's horrible just her lying there and taking this. And knowing that, well, it's for his sake because it's part of his ritual. This is what he does, you know, before it... You know, it's just... uncomfortable.
Yeah.
When he switches, when he's... It looks for Lee's face when she's not basically reacting. That is terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
And such great acting.
What do you think he detects in her, though? Do you, like, that she has seen Bond? Do you think that's why he looks a bit perturbed?
I think she's not reacting how she normally does.
Yeah.
Right,
she's a bit cold, and I think maybe that's why he's sort of surprised and angered by that.
Yeah.
And probably makes him think, yeah, oh, maybe something's going
he's
on.
He's surprised that she isn't as turned on by, you know,
being stroked by a
yeah,
gold
with
gun.
A golden gun. Yes, he is.
You normally
yeah.
love
yeah,
it.
Come on.
You know, come on.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
do you want me to go fast?
Let me warm it up.
Yeah, do you want me to maintain the same speed?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I'm stating the obvious, and I've probably said it already, but it is just the sleaziest Bond film going. I mean, we've just, you know.
Yeah.
Well, there's some
there are some contenders, but I would push this one the most, really. I mean, in the last 5 minutes, we've had Roger Purbin in a Miss Anders in a shower. We moved then on to the Bottoms Up Club, where we just got the most gratuitous ass shot in the whole of Bond. Yeah. And now we've got Scaramanga rubbing his golden gun all over the shop. You know, I mean, it's filthy.
Yeah,
phallic filthy. Imagery. Yeah. Yeah. We mentioned it before. I know Licence to Queer is a fan of this, but saying it's object sexuality and is Scar. You know, he even theorised, didn't he, in the quiz that you know there's a chance Scaramanga might be gay, and that he's just using this woman. He's yeah. using this woman for his own devices. He's actually no. He's far more interested in Bond, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think
by the end of it, anyway.
Yeah,
I think he was saying, Licence to Queer was saying, I hate not using names.
Yeah,
but, David was saying that in the book, I think he said it was more, you know, clear that
yeah.
Scaramanga. You know, seem to be gay in the book, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's quite weird to be analysing it like this now when you've watched this film like kids, and then yeah. you know, always thought it was a bit strange. What's he doing? What's he doing
well,
with that gun?
Yeah, it's not for
funnily
children.
Enough in the book Quantum of Silliness, which is more
available
of our friends.
For, yeah,
yeah. 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 He does this great, yeah, Tchaikovsky or, yeah, Robbie Sims.
yeah.
he stage names for only. For each film, he gives alternative titles, kind of using puns, which is very, very funny. And for this, yeah, one of them is Mr. Kiss Kiss Bangkok. Which is great, isn't it? And Solex and Violence. There are a few more. The talented Mr. Triple Nipple. Good night and foo yuck. How good is that?
That's really clever.
Yeah, and Honey, I Shrunk the Henchman.
Yeah,
outrageous.
Very
yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it's.
Everyone
has been
to laugh there.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Oh, no.
Why is that funny?
Why is that funny? Yeah.
No, but that pretty great much summarises, yeah, the film, doesn't it? All those titles wrapped up.
Yeah, very good. And Foo Yuck, outrageous.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah.
So yeah, once all this stroking has been going on, we then get on the boat, the MI6 headquarters. So, of course, Bond... Apparently Roger Moore didn't actually go to the boat. This must have been a stunt double when he's actually jumping onto the boat, apparently. I'm afraid, again, Pinewood. But obviously, you know, they obviously wouldn't film within the... Yeah. Just as a child, you know, you expect everywhere to be filmed the way it is.
It's such a good set. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, when they first enter, is it like a bar? Or it looks like a converted bar. That
yeah, it's got like glasses hanging above a bar. Yeah. It's really crisp, that. Like, yeah.
But
don't know if it's functional.
I just love it. I remember it as a kid. It's so, you know, vividly in your memory, this amazing set where it's, you know, everything's tilted, but then walkways and steps that are built, you know. Sorry,
I'm thinking
Steve.
In that film, M was getting so pissed off with Q that he needed a drink every 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So he hates him, doesn't he? He's so cross with Q. Shut up. He tells him to shut up twice, doesn't he?
It's like, Desmond, we didn't bother including you in the last film. You can come back, yeah.
Yeah, you can sit at the table if you like.
Yeah. You can sit at the table.
Just as a side note, I feel I need to do this, but I counted how many times Hip fails on what he's been told to do in this film. And this is the first one that Roger manages to escape past Hip. We'll then wait till we have the scene with Q and M, which will probably be in the next minute, where we'll find where Hit fails next time. Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
But he didn't, and he didn't protect Gibson either.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right, okay. Number three.
Gibson.
Yeah.
Can't think of anything he does after that that's at all a failure.
Gives Roger a leg up over a wall.
Yeah, different voice. He has a different voice for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, but he tells him not to go in.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, go on.
You deliberately disobeyed. Sorry. Yeah, so like I said, this was Cubby Broccoli's idea. And the officer sort of explains that, doesn't he, to Bond as he's... Because, again, the audience would want to know this. So it's like a bit of exposition, but... Saying that the Chinese-Americans are bugging each other and that with real estate so expensive, might as well just go into this empty place. But, yeah, very Bond. Bond and M look really annoyed to see each other, don't they? But, of course, this is coming off the back that Gibson's been killed, and that's why... And the Solex has been taken, but not sure he knows that yet, is he?
I'm also slightly threatened by M's makeup. Like, it's sort of, it's powdered quite white. Like, sort of, like, white. With sort of, almost like his eyelids have been stuck down, so he looks really sort of, really
very ill.
Poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He might have been at the time.
Yeah. But maybe that's why he's cross. Character development.
He's nicer to Bond in The Spy Who Loved Me, I think. Next time.
Yeah, he's more. He's well impressed with the stuff, yeah, the one-upmanship with Anya.
Yeah.
Is it Diamonds Are Forever where Bond says to M, sorry about the liver or something like that?
Oh.
Bond's drinking something and he says, sorry about your liver? Or
no, he does. That. I haven't spot seen on. Diamonds in a while. It's the sherry tasting.
Is that Diamonds?
There is no beer for sherry.
It is. It's Diamonds, yeah.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I'm sure someone will correct us on that, but I'm sure there's a scene where...
Yeah, no, he's...
M wants to drink and Bond says he can't because of his liver or something like that. So let's just say, being generous, that the man with the golden gun is unhealthy, Luke, was his liver degenerated to the point where...
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good, Steve.
I know what you, Harry, I know what you mean, though. I know exactly what you mean. With his nose in particular, he just looks very...
Yeah, he looks a bit crusty. Sort of bit.
I had not noticed this. So
yeah. Look out for it. Yeah. It's quite depressing.
Great.
That's why it went down already, in the rankings. Yeah,
I was going to say, we're already ruining this film. Yeah. I almost wish Scaramanga had a contract on you, Harry.
Oh, yeah.
No. What? Yeah. It's good, though, isn't it? I really like this scene, because you get the necessary exposition, you get a bit of a different attitude from everybody than you normally see. You don't normally see Q being bollocks by everybody. And even the guy, what's his name? The expert guy.
Frasier,
yeah. This is really interesting. Yeah, it's such realistic acting. Yeah. So good.
As I say, I link that to Raiders of the Lost Ark, when those two enthusiastic guys are being given exposition, and Indy and Marcus are also.
Marcus?
I love that scene so much. But yeah, I don't know, it really reminds me of someone, you know, only a small part, a sort of. Not an expert, but as you know, now this is really exciting. I don't know.
Really
like it's so crisp. What a guy.
It's almost like local amateur theatre, isn't it? Kind of. As in just. It's a criticism, in a good way. As in, you've got these unknown people who absolutely love taking on the role. That's what I mean. Yeah.
And making the most of, you know, just one line.
So we find out that Gibson has got links with high fats, so then that leads to him. M gets bored with all the Solex exposition. I don't know, the audience, this is the audience speaking. Gentlemen, I congratulate you. You know, it's so good. But actually, Bond sort of saves the day in a way, because it's his idea that... It's his idea that high fat won't have met Scaramanga, but then, of course, he must have done, because he's...
I don't think it's a bad idea by Bond actually to go down that route. I really am confused by how that scene plays out, though, I've got to say. Not this one, the next one. That's why I was keeping I don't want to jump the gun.
Is Hip's error in this that he was supposed to get the Solex and knick-knack got it?
Yeah, his voice is trembling though when he admits that he's lost it. He's like a child in front of the headmaster. It's really quite harrowing.
Do that amazing impression that you did of this line before. I loved it.
No, you put me on the spot. No, too much pressure. What was it he said? He showed it to me in the club, and when I checked, it wasn't there. Well, that was terrible.
That was good.
Very good.
I believe that's his voice. I think that's the actor's voice when he's in that scene. I'm guessing that's the real actor's voice.
Like I say, he is Korean American. He's not, you know, he can't speak English, so I don't know why. Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, Flash Gordon being dubbed.
American actor. Spoiler if you didn't know that.
Did anyone else think it's odd that Moneypenny's not on the ship? Or is she on the ship?
She's not.
She's not on there.
No.
Because usually when they do the M and Q out in the field, Moneypenny's there. Spy Who Loved Me, etc. But she's not on the ship.
The thing is, with all this, although I agree it's funny, I know it's like I think it's been mentioned as a criticism that like Q doesn't appear in Live and Let Die, and there are all these. I think it's absolutely fine to have these these films where just there's a little break to the tradition. I know you're not saying it's a criticism at all, Steve, but as in, I'm fine with Q not appearing in Live and Let Die, and I even though it might benefit from him, but I think it's good to have breaks from certain things, only for one film, just so each film is unique in its own way.
It's here that Bond makes a request, and then Q utters the immortal lines of this.
Absolutely.
This here parish.
Too scared to say it.
You can insert it, can't you?
Yeah.
Really? 007.
Very good. Very good.
Bold. Yeah.
It's delivered so well by him, and not by me, by Desmond Llewellyn, and his face, the face, the exasperation and the disgust. But
Roger's
reaction
is brilliant. I admit it's a little kinky, you know.
yeah. Then Bond's annoyed that M wants Goodnight to accompany him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he's so annoyed. Yeah, I noticed that.
Right, another scene done, I think. Good. So we're now onto the High Fat Estate, which is in Bangkok, I think, or near Bangkok. This was actually filmed in Hong Kong, though. The Hong Kong Dragon Garden was used. We get the guards wearing the traditional, I don't know, Chinese or Thai outfits. But very 70s, we were saying before, weren't we? The Roger Moore, if you want your flares, Steve, and then, goodness me, this is a... Bond and Hip are pretty 70s in this scene.
This seems and very cigars. Odd. Sorry, hey, on you go.
No, I was only going to mention the cigar, which is we've done. But I don't know why they didn't use the cigar. If they tilted it vertically, they could have used that to vault the wall. Sorry, Steve.
Good gadget from Q.
Yeah, or it could open up to a radio transmitter, but Jennifer wouldn't like that.
Oh, yeah, she didn't like that, no.
Yeah, I just think it's another one of those scenes that when you stop and look at it, it doesn't really make sense. Now, I'm talking about High Fat's reaction when he sees Bond. So when he first sees him, he shouts, like, stop, get out, you know, and then when Roger takes off the shirt, he plays it like, oh my God, it's you. But High Fat
you'd recognise his face. Yeah.
It's very strangely played by the actor.
So he's only seen Scaramanga's chest, but not his face.
He knows that he's got it. But then it's a double bluff from High Fat.
And it's really odd to hear Bond talking about himself pretending to be someone else.
Yes.
The man's a menace. There's barely anyone that knows about Bond. All right, calm down, mate.
All right, Shut up.
Inflated opinion of himself. Yeah. Like, he's good, even by my standards.
Yeah. Well, the ego in Casino Royale. I'm obsessed.
Ego. The word ego is said about a dozen times in that film.
Stay tuned, fellas. So Bond then just casually... Yeah, you see there's a plant, isn't there? Because you see the sumo wrestlers are obviously models then. But of course we'll see him later and they turn to life. Again, ridiculous. But we'll get, you know, visually brilliant then. And then Bond's like, oh, actually, might as well... Yeah, I think, again, with the scriptwriters, like, how on earth can we get him into a situation where he's topless when he's just gone on to, you know, he's broken into someone, a real major player's land? don't even know whether he's going to be there, whether or not he'll be, you know, on the state or anywhere near where Bond is. Oh, there's a swimming pool, right, this is my only chance.
Yeah.
Oh, and a girl's just invited me in. Brilliant, right, we're all right then.
Yeah, it's worked out beautifully.
Yes. So
that's... You did it beautifully.
Yes, I was Leave a Gentleman and Wicker Man. Same voice again, Nikki van der Zyl, who dubbed Honey Rider, Sylvia Trench, Jill Masterson, Domino, Vespa Lint in the original Casino Royale, Kissy Suzuki, Solitaire in a couple of scenes, I'm afraid, and Corinne Defoe.
That's more than there are, that's more characters than there are films.
Yeah, she's the most prolific.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe she did the hotel porter earlier on. Oh, surprise. Ah.
Yeah. 74, sir. Wonder who does that one here.
I really like the shot in this scene where it cuts to Scaramanga with the binoculars and he's smiling.
Oh, yeah.
I've jumped forward a little bit, but...
No.
A common criticism of this film is that Scaramanga's too friendly towards Bond, but I really like the glee that he has for all their encounters because he's like, yes, finally an equal, someone that can maybe give me a good match. Yeah. And he sees it as a game. When he sort of lowers the binoculars and he's smiling, he's thinking, ah, this fool, I'm ahead of him. The best spy in the world, this guy that everyone thinks is great and everyone bizarrely knows, I'm ahead of him at this stage. He thinks I'm not onto him. I love that shot.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Agree.
Give us some credit.
No, I totally agree.
Bye! We hear that before she goes. And it's.
And we're okay with the name Tune Me. We're okay with it.
Yeah, well, I only realised it was. Own. It is.
Miss obviously, Austin Powers ripped it on the third one by creating Fook Me, didn't they?
Yeah.
Fook You. It was twins, you.
You kiss your mother with that mouth.
Dear me. I mean, like, just to go on the horny thing again, we've got triple-nippled Roger talking to Chewie with the underwater bush, you know. It's absolutely outrageous.
Yeah.
She's treading water for a while, though. She does well.
Really struggling.
Yeah. Mouthfuls of water.
Yeah.
To chew on.
Very good. I only knew her name originally because... The soundtrack, Chew Me in Grizzly Land. Which I don't quite understand that. If someone wants to explain, feel free. But anyway.
Very awesome writing and let us know.
Yeah. Writes a reply with really double S. Yeah, so you've already mentioned he's talking about himself and High Fat reveals that he paid $1 million for the previous hit. And very Bond, he gets invited to dine with him later on, a bit like Octopussy. Yeah, even though, of course, it was all a ploy, Bond just casually, when he comes out, he just chucks the nipple, doesn't he?
Yeah,
so cocky!
Down. I know.
He might need it again.
Yeah, I've always thought about that. What if at dinner, if High Fat just said, actually, can I just...
Yeah.
The nipple.
Yeah.
Or if he finds it in the bush. When he's preening the bush and he finds the...
Yeah, but would... If Which you found bush? That, would you definitely be able to identify that as? I mean, be thinking. Yeah, hang on, is that a? Yeah,
I feel sorry for Q or whoever's made it. You know?
To be honest, I find that frustrating. Like when Q in License to Kill just tosses the famous
broom again.
Broom. I keep mentioning it, but he just tosses it away. Like,
don't keep it.
You might need it again, or someone might. Yeah.
Don't tell me you saw him.
Yeah,
because it's so crisp that
it is.
He's jealous and he's like, again, Bond's better than him, isn't he?
There's a little glimmer of a relationship developing between Pippin and Bond there, which is nice as well.
Is the purpose of what's just happened?
Oh, John.
There's no point to this whole scene at all.
Floor is yours, John.
Is it? It's so that Bond gets invited later.
Yeah.
I mean, the next two scenes is nonsense.
So we get I'll give you that. It's very enjoyable, you know. But like, It makes no sense whatsoever. All it does is Heifer admits that A, he's put contracts out on people before and that they've got a plot. That's all it does. And then he's like, the one thing that you think to yourself, well, maybe it's because he doesn't want violence in his home and that's why, because he says that after. Well, why didn't he just catch...
oh, what, no, that's...
What is the point of deciding, yeah, you come back later, right, putting it on risk, he may not come back, he just knows this information now, you come back later, and I'm going to plant two sumo wrestlers and knick-knack with a trident to stop you. Yeah, when I had armed guards before, I just find
it's watertight.
But you don't know what an average night at Heifer's residence is like, just, do you?
It makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah,
no, it doesn't make any sense.
No,
stop it! Stop it!
But he doesn't even. Nick Nats doesn't work for Heifer, so why would he be the one? Yeah, anyway, yeah. We don't. I love it. I'm sorry. No.
I don't need to try and prove a point. I'm thinking out loud. This film, it just takes me to places I never thought I'd go with James Bond. That's all I'll say.
It's so stylistically well done, though. Like the reveal of Scaramanga, the lovely guitar, oriental guitar theme, was it? Like, and after a useful, happy long life. No,
yeah,
it's just so iconic.
Oh, oh yes, yeah, it is.
Bond doesn't know that I can't remember what the guy. In fact, Richard Liu, the actor. Unfortunately, this is his last film. He died shortly after. So yeah, very sad. Chris, please, I need to get your thoughts on these various scenes, please. I'm desperate to hear your opinion.
Basically. I agree with John. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. Apart from that scene, it's just it's yeah. Because if you wanted to, he doesn't even have the meal with him. You know,
no.
He invites him back to have dinner, but you don't even get to dinner because he gets knocked out before he even gets like halfway up the garden path.
But if Nick,
so what was the point?
Well, Nick Nack,
why don't you just shoot me?
If Nick Nack's busy dressing up as whatever it is, he can't make dinner as well, can he? Can't
well,
do both.
No. But it is just for the, you know, so you can have the scene where someone thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if the sumo wrestling kind of figures were actually real people?
Yeah. Does it end up great?
Is that a strong scene?
It's not. No, it isn't. But it's a fun scene.
Sorry.
People need to see it, though.
James Pickup. List this as an iconic, brilliant fun scene.
It's entertaining, but you know, the purpose of it is to set up this unbelievable scene where he grabs a sumo wrestler's buttock.
Right,
anyway,
yeah.
I'm definitely jumping the gun.
The golden gun. Right.
Yeah. Before then.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, Bond just briefly speaks to Goodnight, doesn't he? He's in a white, lovely white tux now.
Yeah, gorgeous.
Yeah, she promises that she'll be waiting for him.
So yeah. More innuendo, isn't it? And everything else warm.
And everything else warm.
Yeah. Right, can I ask about that? Well, I don't understand. She seems excited, and then when he gets picked up by Lieutenant Hip and his two nieces, why? Yeah. And everything else warm? What is it? She's threatened by what, those two? Or what? I don't know. She changes quickly. Can anyone?
Just volatile.
Anyone?
The giggling girls. She knows that Bond's such a predator that he might just cop off with these young girls.
Yeah.
He's not a. I mean, they're schoolgirls.
School uniforms.
She
wouldn't have. She wouldn't have known, you know, how well he dealt with BB Doll. So, you know, maybe if she'd known that.
Well, in Skyfall, when Silver's rubbing his knee, Craig's Bond says, "What makes you think it's my first time?" Maybe Goodnight knows that Bond and Hip have got a little something, so she sees Hip driving.
Ah, yes.
Perhaps. Yeah.
That's a more likely explanation.
Yeah.
That is a more plausible explanation.
they both go to the same flare maker, you know?
That's code. Yeah.
Oh, heck. The nieces, again, I'm sure any Bond purist, you know, diehard fan, they can't stand them. I think it was only last night I was goading people on Twitter about them, but Wizard of Ice, the usual suspects, obviously aren't going to like scenes like this.
Bye-bye! Bye-bye! Yeah.
Sorry. They're speaking in different languages, apparently, yes. The two girls.
Yeah.
It's so odd.
What, wait.
Why are they laughing at Bond? Just because, I don't know.
What do you mean they're speaking?
Like one, yeah.
They're both speaking in different languages to each other, apparently. Yeah.
Not to the untrained ear, though. Just get away with it.
No. Yeah. They were going to be dubbed, but they didn't. There isn't time. And
the there's lines aren't significant enough.
No. It is one of another great Barry Q. I mean, if that's the point of the scene, it's so good. The music to sort of the reveal, really sinister, quite scary. I know it's silly. I know I don't understand the point of it. I know it doesn't make sense. But if you just took the scene in context, it's so memorable, isn't it? Just Nick, the turn of Knick Knack, like
yeah. All that's missing is
he looks so excited as well when he's going to stab Bond. He looks so excited. He's jumping up with a little trident, like get him.
Yeah, quite nimble.
What's missing is Kevin McAllister dressing up as a shepherd at a stable in the background.
Knick Knack has the right idea though, more so than so many villains. Knick Knack's like right.
Yeah, pitchfork in the throat or something.
Yeah, I know.
Not here.
It's absolutely brutal. Yeah. But
this be my home.
The fight with the sumos, I presume Bond purists aren't especially overwhelmingly pleased with
It's hissing and all sorts.
More noise.
Yeah. So I'm happy.
Yeah. Why does he
people's problem with it exactly?
Yes.
Is it too silly? Is that what the complaint is? Because what are we, 40 minutes in, I've seen people's asses on camera, you know, three nippled men, you know, a man trying to arouse a woman with a golden
this is
gun.
Too grounded, really.
Is this too much?
This fight's too gritty for me.
They start watching.
Tip me right over the edge.
Yeah. This is more like it.
Roger giving wedges out.
Oh.
Good.
I like it.
I like it. I think it's fun. You know, you get to see Bond in trouble. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
He struggles. Mm.
Yeah.
You can't find
it. And it's only because of the fight stopping Nick.
Yeah. This would have been his final fight. Imagine.
Do they have sumo in Thailand? I thought it was Japan. So again,
look, you know, if someone can't be asked to check whether two actors are speaking the same language.
It's because they had models of sumos. They had to. It's the models that they had, and then they had to get in some people.
Yeah.
Tom, there was a comment. There was a comment you made before where you said, "Before they come to life." So I want to just double check if it's okay. You don't think that those sumo wrestlers are like in Night at the Museum or something where they come to life at night or something?
I think I can't say that as a child. I can't remember thinking. Was the audience meant to think they were always there waiting, standing?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I saw that it was a statue. I'm clever. Oh, I'm onto this. I put Ben Fox with the film.
I hate doing this and thinking about stuff like this, but it's quite funny if you think about. So those sumo wrestlers were standing where the statue sumo wrestlers were. So, after Bond had left before, like, right, can we get a couple of sumo wrestlers in and please can you move those models, like a couple of guards, no, they need to be well.
Like,
out
but
of
don't
sight,
hold on, like, what position are they in? Let's just work out. I'm holding him like this.
Yeah,
he's coming.
But the models are really shiny.
Yeah.
This is perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. You look like an imp.
But you're not actually allowed to do anything with him when you're getting dinner.
No.
We cut to a kung fu film.
That trident is strictly a prop.
It's a leisure accessory. It's not to be used. But again, I've just realised, of course, it's all part of the same thing, isn't it? It's all part of the wax model.
Yeah, it's all
posing at the end. It's all... I don't know whether that's just because they were...
The model of Bond comes to life at the end.
Not the fact that it makes any sense.
Magic.
It's all, all horror, all fantasy film. It's all, Fancy Island.
Now, I should confess here, I know this is way into the future. As a child, I did think that it was a different James Bond, you know.
What do you mean?
Like, at the end. That one of, you know, the original James Bond goes down below, and then it's like a different person who's, you know, I don't know, who is the mannequin at the end. When I was a child.
That's
crazy.
Supernatural.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It messed with my head. So having, but Tommy's, you know, 38 now, so I was just double checking about the sumo wrestlers because he said come to life. That was why.
Really 007 is part of the Pod Dojo Network.
Stop it! Take Mr. Bond to school.
Very good.
Not here.
Not here, yeah.
Yeah,
this
not
is
here.
My home.
This is my home, yeah, sorry.
Do it again.
I was eager to get to take Mr. Bond to school.
So excited.
Well, the filmmakers were, weren't they?
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Bond is, you know, he was meant to be being killed or being murdered.
Yeah.
He's now getting a spa treatment. So it's worked out quite well, hasn't it?
I don't know how much he understands as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't kill him here at my home. Oh, right, so we'll just take him just outside and shoot him. No, take him to the karate school.
Take him to Cobra Kai. Yeah.
Definitely.
Like, what does he wake up thinking? Like, I was just about to die. And then, hold on, I'm very comfortable here. There are people coming out for a judo lesson. I'm not moving, though. I'm perfectly comfortable. I'm still going to lie down. Yeah, and this...
They're like,
where are my trousers?
Yeah.
Why am I wearing these pajamas?
Who dressed me?
I'm a grown man.
Doesn't he get put in pajamas in License to Kill as well? Does he wake up with pajamas on in License to Kill? Yeah. So
no. Oh yeah.
Pajama party.
Yeah. Pajamas. Yeah.
And octopusy.
Octopusy.
Pajamas.
There's a theme.
Nightcap. Yeah. But
no.
It doesn't. You know, it's like. You're asking all these questions like, why have you gone to the school? Why is it the kung fu? Why didn't you kill him? Why is he in pyjamas? Just, it's all right, they won't. Just play some gorgeous Barry music. Get an iconic shot of him reclining to the... It's just... They won't remember. They won't care. So, yeah, it works.
I never really cared about any of this stuff as a kid. When I was younger, I never questioned.
No, absolutely. Any of
it. It's made for children. Yeah.
some of the stuff we've discussed tonight is not for children.
I did laugh when, you know, obviously he's reclining, like you said, and then, you know, when all these karate students come out, he like sits up a little bit embarrassed, like he becomes a little bit aware of himself. He's lying there reclining.
He covers his crotch.
Sorry, Matthew.
No, I was gonna say we obviously then get more stuff that we used to laugh at, you know, perhaps. Not appropriately.
Just great.
This first guy, what's his name?
Hanksman.
What is it?
Tashman.
Hanksman, I have. I was picturing it's like
Tashman. I got...
It's Tashman.
Tashman.
And he has a tash. He is Tashman.
Tashman.
That's a level of sophistication. We need a name. Has he got a moustache?
Maybe it's his surname, though. It might be like John Tashman. You know, Christian.
Yeah, and he thought, because that's my name, I better have a moustache.
Yeah.
People will be disappointed.
Yeah.
Tashman.
You've shaved it off.
But yeah, Matt, what you're going to say, are you going to say about the laughter?
Well, I was, but I just wanted to say a very Tom fact about ZZ Top, that, you know, they're famous for having long beards, but there were three members and the clean-shaven, what is it?
Frank
John
Beard.
Frank Beard.
Just genius, isn't it?
Tashman. Like, we as kids just used to rewind it. And I mean, there's other bits coming up that we used to rewind and howl laughing at. we really couldn't get through it. You know, we thought it was funny.
James Bickham's Pete Bond, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
We would be in tears and then rewinding it and to the point of not being able to breathe watching it. I'm getting there now.
It's like, why the noises at certain stages? And like,
yeah. It's so... linked to the moves as well, like the strain in each move.
Yeah. Like what? Who was he? That wasn't that impressive, was it? Like, I don't know.
It's making it up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Six minutes. Check. And then he's sipping on his tea, Bond, and then he's challenged to a fight.
Yes.
And again, this is classic Roger Moore stuff.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. I like how he kicks him in the face and cheats, because Bond isn't a black belt. Bond on the face would get battered by black belts.
Yeah.
It's boring if Bond can beat everyone at everything. You know, he's
up there and do all their skills as well.
Yeah, if he's going to go up against someone like Chula, is it Chula? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah,
Chula.
He's obviously the main man of that dojo. He's obviously the Johnny Lawrence of that Cobra Kai. He's the main dude there. So Bond would get destroyed by him. He has to fight dirty to beat him. I like how he, you know, at the end, decks him and then thinks, right, I'm going out the window. I've got the best of him for the moment, but this is not going to last.
I think he does attempts one possible slight chop on Chula, like, you know, puts his hand in the chop position, but all his moves are good, like, moves that he'd be using in fights otherwise, where he's, like, kicking the backs of the legs and bringing him down that way and stuff.
Yeah, but he ends with a punch to Chula in the face.
Just at the start, you're right, Steve. How crisp, though, that Chula sort of looking at him as he's going down, like, hey, you won't be doing that again to me.
Small character detail, but it just tells you I'm no fool.
Yeah.
What a crisp, hard guy this guy is.
Really?
Yeah, he is. He's quite
good looking lad as well.
Very good looking with the sort of Lego hair.
Oh,
yeah.
Black.
But there's a bit where he kind of just like shuffles his top before he does it, like, oh, yeah, I'm the man. Brilliant.
Again, you think, I'm worried about Bond here. I'm not so sure he's going to beat the guy.
Well, yeah, what can he do? Yeah.
He could have been a henchman. He could have been a henchman in his own right.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could add him in. Who knows?
Retcon. Yeah.
Right, yeah, we've got to get to the noises of this. This is all about noises, isn't it? It sounds like Roger Moore, but it's Chula. It's
Mustard Chula,
Here, right.
Must have been dubbed, must have that bit overdubbed.
I mean the comedy with the bows is spot on for me. Obviously he does the little nod to the first to Tashman and then does the proper bow immediately after and then when he punches Chua, he does a little bow.
Mr. Bean.
We bow.
He does do the first nod he does is to the sensei or whoever it is. It's just a little nod of the head like that. It's just funny as well.
That's peak Moore, that first nod. All right.
But he does. Moore gets a. From Chula, he gets a proper kick to the throat. Flying kick to the throat.
It's not a bad sign.
Dreadful. Yeah.
There's a bit where he falls where it looks like Moore actually fell. Like it wasn't like a stunt. He looks properly disorientated. He sort of puts his hands up and falls backwards as if to say, oh, you get me. I'm Roger Moore. You're not supposed to hit me. I'm the star.
We forgot to mention the sort of sword fight.
Oh, I was just going to say that. That's harrowing.
Go on, John. It's awful, isn't it?
Brutal, it's another one of these moments, like we've talked about before, you know, where Bond...
What's going on?
It becomes a kind of... like just a couple of minutes where we're just going to show some of the culture of a country. But that sword fight, I remember vividly when I was younger being quite affected by that, because you know, just seeing this dagger just sticking out of this guy with some fake blood and the scream,
and this is
as
school.
Well, it's the scream. Oh, it really
they
got
they
to
don't
me
look
that.
Old at all.
No, not at all.
The shot of you don't hear the dagger go in.
Yeah.
You just see him jump out.
Horrible.
But it's quite. I like it how this warm-up act is a bit like a one-day cricket match, and they're wearing colours, and then got their all the uniforms where it's like red versus blue, and then you know the real match, the test match later, they're all in white.
Very English way of looking at it.
I'm going to say that's the first time that sort of analogy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I don't think Lorenzo Granger or Shayla over in America will have made that comparison.
You'd never know. Cricket.
It's a bit like Spectre Island, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
It just goes to show how hardcore these people are even when they're practicing, people get killed, they use real knives. Yeah. And they love to just like pick him up by his ankles and like drag him off. Throw him in the river.
Yeah. 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 The clones.
I mean, I'm sure this doesn't work, and John will rightly say there's no point in it, but who are these people? These are hips. Sorry, not hip. High fat's people.
Yeah,
but high fat isn't. Is high fat just a money man? Isn't? Why is he doing this? Does it relate to Scaramanga's plan? Or
do you know high fat originally? Apparently, it was an original idea that he was going to have a henchman of his own. This is not a joke. He was meant to have a henchman of his own, like a bodyguard called Low Fat, but they decided against it. That's true. Yeah.
It sounds so much like one of your...
No, I know. I know when I started saying it sounded like I was joking, and then when I finished the sentence, it definitely sounded like a joke, but genuinely...
Showing some uncharacteristic restraint when it comes to...
Yes, yeah, exactly. Jokes. So give them credit. They decided against it. I don't know if it was Broccoli. He wanted Scaramanga and Mort to have a chase on elephants, riding elephants.
Yeah, he was obsessed, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Slowly.
Yeah, but... Again, restraint. Give these guys credit. It's a very modest film.
Ran out of time.
Yeah. Really, Doublehouse.
In part 4, Bond goes on a boat chase, a car chase involving an incredible stunt, meets J.W. Pepper, and Scaramanga gets away in a flying car.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.